We're back with another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. As always, you can email the show at radio@thefederalist.com. Follow us on Twitter at FDRLST. Make sure to subscribe wherever you download your podcasts as well. Today, I'm joined by Christopher Bedford. I was going to say my colleague, but my former colleague, Christopher Bedford, is like muscle memory at this point. He's the executive editor over at the Common Sense Society. Chris, thanks for stopping by.
Great to be here again.
If you don't know, Chris and I always do these podcasts in person. Zoom has become really a norm in podcasting now, or virtual podcasting has been a norm.
I hate it.
I know. We do a lot of our podcasts that way, and it actually opens up a lot of opportunities. You can talk to people like David Mamet, for instance, who are outside DC and are eager to, you know, or are willing, and we're eager to have them. But Chris, I think the in-person component is a real benefit when it comes to you, because just being able to read your body language, for instance, gives me a lot of cues.
Do I give off vibes?
You give off vibes. On that note, actually, one of the vibes that Chris was just giving off is we have a TV on behind us, and they're currently covering the news, actually just broke within the hour as we're taping this, that Alec Baldwin is going to be charged with involuntary manslaughter alongside the armorer on the set of that film Rust, in which the bullets from a gun that Baldwin fired killed a director of cinematography and actually wounded the director of the film itself. Chris, I can just tell you are chomping at the bit to talk about this. You seem excited for justice.
It's my motivating factor in life. I hate to see it.
Couldn't have happened to a better guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you had any doubt, which I did at first, I mean, you see that footage of Baldwin right after he shoots this poor woman. Poor wife.
Mother.
Poor mother. Mm-hmm. And he's doubled over, and he looks like he's about to dry heave. And he looks like what you'd imagine you would feel like if you accidentally shot somebody who mm-hmm. didn't deserve it. But then what was revealed in the months following this was the blame everybody but me, anger, and never any really heartfelt sadness. Mm-hmm. And it makes me... They're playing it in the background right now on the TV, the images. And suddenly I'm realizing that I look at those pictures. I thought, oh my gosh, poor guy. Obviously disagree with him on a million different things. He's obviously a jerk. But I mean, this is an awful moment. This is a human moment. And now I'm realizing, looking at them, he was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm in so much trouble. My career's in trouble. What's going to happen next? Am I going to be in trouble with the police? At least that's how I look at those images now. And that's based not on me doing some psychological reading of the guy. It's based on how he acted over the next couple of months. His non-apology accusation tour. That was just really... Like, if you thought that there was an ugly character inside of Alec Baldwin, that was proof.
I was thinking about this on the way over, that it may have actually ratcheted up pressure on prosecutors, his media tour over the course of the last year and a half, because I think he really thought that he was doing himself favors. He has this interview, if you haven't watched it, it's with George Stephanopoulos, and it's a grilling from Stephanopoulos. It could have been harsher, I think, for sure, but he touches on all of the sort of most sensitive and difficult questions, and Baldwin is so indignant.
Belligerent.
Yeah, he is just unwilling to shoulder blame, and I know there's a legal reason for that, obviously, because it was in court, but the way that he has talked about this since, which is blame everybody else, not just shut up and offer your condolences, say, I think I did everything right by protocols, leave it at that, and just be quiet. He may have really increased the pressure on the prosecutors. Now, I'm very interested to see how this is handled by the armorer. I know that this is a sort of seems like a tertiary story in the great drama of American politics and culture at the moment, but it is a huge mystery how those live rounds got into that gun.
And apparently it's happened before.
On set.
I mean, to confuse live rounds, it's just wild.
It's extremely wild. Yeah. They say they were shooting live rounds for fun out in the desert while they were filming a couple of times.
Then you keep those things separate. I mean, when I'm hunting with an over-under, we have to watch some people, maybe some of the older people or younger people or just maybe marksmen are shooting with a 20 gauge versus a 12 gauge. Well, if you put the wrong shell into your shotgun and you fire it, you're going to lose a hand. Mm-hmm. If you're unlucky, or maybe worse, maybe get off a little easier. The essential way which you keep these different rounds away from each other, and how crucial it is to check each one and the different colors and everything. That's just duck hunting. Here you're shooting rounds at people. Mm-hmm. I would guess right now that there's a much stronger case against the armorer for involuntary manslaughter than there is against the actor.
So the woman who passed away, her name is Helena Hutchins. She was a wife. She was a mother. And that's who our prayers are with right now. I can't imagine how torturous this is for them. Hopefully the facts will be exposed. I mean, as of now, it seems like absolutely nobody knows how those rounds got into the gun. But hopefully the facts and
truth. Wasn't magic.
Yeah, it wasn't magic. We'll be exposed. I highly doubt it was a setup for Alec Baldwin to do something like that. But either way, it will be interesting to watch the case unfold. Chris, on that note, have you been paying attention to any of the Idaho murder drama?
No, but I think like all men in America, it's impacted me in that I can't leave the house at night without every door being locked and hammers. Like across the women who I know, they're like having sleepovers with each other when their husbands are out of town. I come home and there's a hammer next to my bed and I'm like, no, we have guns, right? And there's like multiple guns, so you don't need the hammer. And so I've got two hunting trips over the next 2 weekends, and the hell this Idaho psychopath is putting me through now. All the paranoia.
Yes, you're the real victim.
I'm the real victim. No, I'm kidding here. But I know that it's really important to a number of people who are following it. And I shouldn't really speak from the couch as someone who hasn't even really followed it, but that girl downstairs, that's suspicious.
It's weird stuff. It's
real weird
stuff. And the only reason I ask is because the Baldwin case has obviously, because he's a celebrity, attracted a lot of intrigue. No celebrities involved in this horrific slaughter in Idaho. There's a decent 2020 special that came out, I believe, last week that does a good job breaking things down. You're right, that other person, it's strange as heck, but the American true crime obsession feels like it's hitting a fever pitch. And I have to me, it really feels like it's become this sick outlet for escapism. And I say that as somebody who imbibes all of it. I mean,
it's always been that way. You go back to the following of the
In Cold Blood.
If you go back to, I mean, Bonnie and Clyde, the hit back against the banks and the hit back against the man, the serialization of crime in the American West, Jack the Ripper, the Lindbergh baby, crime, especially lurid crime, especially crime involving attractive women. Mm-hmm. That stuff sells. And it's kind of gross to see. I mean, I turned on a cable news the other day and I saw footage from the police responding to a noise complaint at these women's house a week before.
Yeah.
There was no reason to post that footage except the girl was so pretty and it was video of her. Like, that was it. But what the heck is a police response to a noise complaint a week before? And you see that with the traveling, the honeymooning couple where the woman was killed by her boyfriend and put in a canyon, that footage playing all the time. You see that all the way back to Jack the Ripper. You see this, or probably before that, this obsession with people with a combination of sex and violence. And it's unseemly to see, but it's definitely human nature.
It's absolutely human nature. I think what's new, though, is the level of, I don't want to say audience, but public interaction with these crimes. And that's definitely something that's happening with the Idaho thing. But the reason that they're posting footage like that is because people are like, I think they actually feel pressure for transparency because people are spending hours on Reddit looking at floor plans of the house. And trying to understand. And it does feel to me like an outlet to be productive and to accomplish things in your life.
Amateur sleuthing and crime solving, that's another old tradition.
Yeah, but again, like, this is, it has
right,
been
the internet's made it different.
Yeah,
and 24-hour news has made it different as opposed to an hour a night or 2 hours a night. Now it's 24 hours. I got to fill it. And there are people like images.
There are podcasters who are solving crimes. There are Reddit threads that are solving crimes. There's just like, I understand. I actually think this is important because it touches on a deep nerve in human nature. I agree with that completely. But what the internet has done is made it really accessible, has created communities that are building up around it. And I really do think for some people, as you're just kind of spinning your wheels in a boring computer job or Zoom job, it gives you an outlet to feel like you're doing something. And
people are doing. I mean, I was just reading because I got sucked into watching The Royals, which I guess I'm like 6 years behind on. But, you know, I'll go out there and say it's so far a pretty good show. But there was there have been a prince who was accused of being involved with the Jack the Ripper murders. There was a lord who was accused of this. And that was in real time by people who are trying to solve these cases and figure it out, or at least whispered about. So one of the dangers is that these sleuths saw a finger at the wrong people.
Yep.
But, you know, that also reminds me of the complaint you hear from corporate media, which is, well, the danger of us not being in charge of what information comes out there. Yep. So I'm interested in the whole thing. I do have something on a lighter subject.
Well, let me finish a thought on that.
Okay.
I do think, yes, that happened to a professor in Idaho recently. And I think that's part of the danger here. But also just, how do I put this? The whole thing is there are people who are very, very skilled and can do this work. And like, there's one of the best docuseries of the last 10 years is called Don't F with Cats. If you haven't seen it, it's fantastic.
I've not seen it.
Yeah. Well, you should, and you should make your cat watch it with you. But actually don't do that.
Are you cat shaming?
The cat will be upset by what it sees. But anyway, there are some people that I think are really good with this, but also I think there's something important and have skills and have built them up and fine. But there's also something really important, I think, about turning inward to your immediate community, to improving your family, your community, and the sort of global reach is unhealthy in many ways. And one example of that is fingering the wrong person. Hey, listeners, if you're like me and enjoy diving into the week's top stories in U.S. politics mixed with humor and hot takes, you need to subscribe to the Decaf podcast right now. Give it 30 minutes of your time as hosts Mark and Taylor discuss how much influence Trump really has in the Republican Party heading into 2024, plus all things sports and pop culture. Whether you're a politico or just someone who wants to impress your friends, you won't want to miss it. Subscribe to Decaf on Apple and Spotify today. But please, Chris, take us to your lighter note.
The Martin Luther King Memorial they put up in Boston.
give us your take.
Have we talked about it yet?
We have not.
I mean, it's perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
Why? If you're unfamiliar with this, it's four disembodied arms wrapped around each other. If from one angle, it looks like human stool. From one angle, it looks like a phallus. From no angles does it look like Martin Luther King embracing his wife after he won the Nobel Peace Prize in a beautiful and timeless picture. From none. But here's why I love it. Modern art and most of modernism, the architecture, is at best a practical joke and at worst a cynical and kind of evil thing done to undermine us and detach us from beauty and truth and all these things that most, if you talk to these, like the philosophers of modern art, say are just make-believe social constructs. What is beauty? What is truth? They hate it. So the most, like, at worst, it's that. And at best, it's just a practical joke. It's the best reading of it. And most, and you have to reach a certain level of group consensus before the average consumer of modern art or a person who's subjected to it in civic architecture is willing to say, yo, that's really stupid, right? Because everyone else is sitting around there stroking their chin and going, wow, so beautiful, so diverse. And you feel left out. You're like, well, I guess I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to insult the Martin Luther King statue for crying out loud. And I guess I just don't get it. I guess it's just and this one was so bad for the low cost of $10 million that it pulled the mask back for a minute off of modern art, where everyone just looked at it and it was just silence. It was like, What the heck is that?
You know what would have been more beautiful is an actual rendering of understandable rendering of the human embrace of both of them in their full bodies.
What would have been beautiful is the timeless styles that greater artists than live today have worked to show us. I mean, the David.
But it's just the penis.
I mean...
the David, but it just that.
Imagine if the Pieta was just like four limbs, as opposed to the virgin teenage Mary holding the adult body of her crucified. Like, you need the whole thing to show the embrace and humans need to be able to understand it. They need
no,
to be able to
don't,
connect
Chris.
To it.
You
they
don't need the whole.
It needs to be a greater. It needs to be bigger than ourselves. It needs to be uplifting. These are all like super basic concepts that are completely rejected. But I love that it's just so obvious to everyone. I mean, even CNN had to cover it. And they're like, reaction mixed. a lot of guffaws, a lot of people not liking it. NPR eventually had to pick up on it. They called it... it was praise and scorn. Now, they had like five different examples of scorn, including from the family. And the only person who praised it was the mayor of Boston, who had to dedicate it. And it was like, look at this. And so she hadn't even like probably seen the reaction yet. And she's like, this brave and diverse and it shows and liberal trope. And this is on Boston Common, which is a beautiful park.
It's gorgeous.
It's the oldest park in Boston. Back in the day, it had useful things like people would bring their cows there to, because even you had meat in the cities, they bring their cows there to graze. They'd have public hangings there. Now it's just devoted to beauty, but it's still called the Common. You have the swan boats across in the Boston Gardens. You've got Make Way for Ducklings, a children's book right around there. You've got the Boston State House with the gold dome. Which
you
is
got
a beautiful piece
Dunkin'.
Of architecture. There's a Dunkin' Donuts on the corner, right next to the Fox News. You get a great Irish coffee down there. Freedom Trail goes right by, not too far from Faneuil Hall. Get a scorpion bowl. But to put it there, too, like I wish they'd put it like underneath a highway overpass. Now we're stuck with it. But it's great when people feel empowered to say, oh, come on. Are you having a laugh?
When I saw it cast against the picture of it cast against the beautiful buildings on the other side of the street from the Commons that are just old and gorgeous. And
imagine owning that building.
And
you live in Massachusetts, so you have to be like, so brave.
It's also not the thing that we should be remembering about Martin Luther King. First of all, as other people have pointed out, that photo is not nearly iconic enough to be split and then publicly recognizable without being in its whole. Secondly, Martin Luther King's relationship with his wife, the insights that we have into it, courtesy of one J. Edgar Hoover, are dark. And, just sort of diving into the personal life of Martin Luther King as a monument to him, as opposed to his professional contributions, I mean, that's really not... The fact that that was chosen, I think, is extremely bizarre and indicative of something that's also very postmodern.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they had a great love that is complicated and denies understanding, but nobody really... make sculptures of John F. Kennedy embracing Jackie O.
No, seriously.
I mean, there's a reason for that.
You know what? This has been a lot of Zoomer girls seem to be very interested in the relationship between JFK Jr. and Carolyn Bessette. And it's just like they will post fashionable photos of them, like paparazzi photos from the 90s of both of them. And it's like, she was beating him. Like, this is not a relationship. They'll say like relationship goals and stuff like that. This is not a relationship to lionize or to, it's just like purely aesthetic. So I guess in one sense, I'm glad they're recognizing that is a classically beautiful couple. Their fashion was beautiful for the time, but like, I mean, come on. Like, that's just a tangent, but it's been a bugaboo of mine for about a year.
But Boston's a good place for this to happen in. Because Boston has been a city that has gone through incredible amounts of vandalism by the modernists. You have on one hand the State House, if you've ever seen The Departed, the golden domed building there, and true Massachusetts fashion completed years late and massively over budget, even hundreds of years ago.
Did the Irish build it?
I doubtful. And then you have the State Police Station, the City Hall. which are among the best known brutalist examples of architecture.
Heinous.
Absolutely heinous.
Yeah.
Joyless, concrete, cracking. And just like, this is another thing, when like this sculpture did, when you reject these timeless basic principles of beauty and art, well, it doesn't really work. Like the modern art and the Air and Space Museum right now, not too far from us in the National Mall, is undergoing massive structural renovations because that ugly building that's built like no one's ever built a building in human history. there's a reason for that. And it's cracking and it's breaking and there are leaks and it's falling down and it's sliding. They had to pull it back up. They're like, oh, we're trying to freshen up the inside. BS. In the modern part of the National Gallery, the whole wing had to be redone second time in like 50 years. The whole thing had to be redone because it's cracking and breaking and doesn't hold up because they don't follow these basic timeless principles of how to hold up a roof or how to fortify a wall or where windows should go. I mean, it's wild and it doesn't take that much. I mean, if you go to...
Why put in windows, though, when you can allow an overpaid, overeducated artist to enjoy the timeless art of intellectual masturbation?
Yeah,
why do you need windows?
So I'm not positive, but I would bet that this artist, this sculptor, went to the best schools and learned from, you know, the top teachers, and they all taught him this garbage. But if you want to actually be a good artist, amateur, professional, just look around you. The buildings that you see, you pointed out on Boston Common, the other sculptures around there, the monuments in Massachusetts, let those be your teacher. Mm. None of them are, it's not a musket held by an arm in Lexington. It's the Minuteman. It's a famous statue. The most beautiful buildings on Boston Common and Gardens are not glass, although there is plenty of glass in Boston. They're stone and brick. They're beautiful. And I always wonder when I see some beautiful building right next to some very ugly building. I'm like, when the architect went down there and was like overseeing the construction, did they not even feel like an ounce of shame? It'd be like me taking one of my essays and just inserting it into the King James Bible or something, and like putting it in there. Like, I was going to put this page right here, right next to that. I'd be embarrassed. I'm going to slip this right into the back of Hamlet. There we go. Just add my little addition. But they don't. There's no shame at all. And they're shameless people. And it's really, really makes me happy to see that this person can't Google their name without even NPR being like, oh. Man, you dropped a turd.
So this is not at all what I planned to talk about. I actually had a plan for what we were going to talk about, which is...
You started off with a lot of sad stuff.
I know. What I wanted to talk about was this Jim Jordan tweet from last week that said, God, guns, and gas stoves. And Chris, for all your issues with Jim Jordan, I wanted to talk about that tweet in particular because I think it is emblematic of an effort among conservatives right now to try and figure out how that, you know, this upcoming debt ceiling negotiation, how do you message it and how do you fight it in a way that prioritizes the right things in a cultural emergency, right? And so anyway, that's what I wanted to talk about.
Well, I'm glad we talked about the monument instead.
No, you know what I mean.
Like, I like cooking with gas, but debt ceiling, ugh.
Yeah,
we can talk about that any week.
No, but that's the thing. Like, this is all part of the media's missing everything that's happening, of course, with populism on the left and the right, but it's sort of like Republicans didn't realize back in 2012 when they're talking about this. Like, no, J.D. Vance posted an article from Compact yesterday saying basically like we can make birth free, right? Like there are ways to make childbirth free in the United States of America. It costs some average, I think according to that article, like $3,000 for women who have insurance, or it can cost $3,000 for women who have insurance.
Yeah, and talk to someone who even has insurance or has a miscarriage, that or a stillbirth.
Right.
It's incredibly expensive. I know people who had to pay for that for years, and that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and in CNN, you know, if they're talking about the Martin Luther King statue, this is just interesting. Like, they're going to, you know, give their sort of superficial opinions. It looks like this, it looks like that. But I think what they're really missing is that things are shifting under their feet right now. And, you know, having a Republican senator who's something of a rising star, J.D. Vance, saying, let's make childbirth free. You know, why shouldn't we? It shows where the priorities are shifting, even while there's these debt ceiling negotiations that Republicans might feel like they're back in 2012 or whatever. What they're trying to do is say, you know, the government needs to shrink because it's tyrannical. It is trying to take the choice of how you cook away from you. It's trying to take the choice of how you defend your family away from you. It's trying to take the choice of how you worship in public away from you. And here we go. There you have J.D. Vance, someone saying, okay, well, maybe the government should be a little bit bigger in this one respect. And the way that CNN talks about the statue is not in this broader context of like, wow, this country is, things have changed really fast.
You don't need a bigger government. You just need a focused government.
Exactly.
And a government focused on the areas that are good for its people, as opposed to letting these little bureaucrats with their very limited world views on their very limited subset of things. I mean, what do you do if your job is kitchen safety? Regulating that, you come up with regulations.
Yeah,
and they're just not. It's not. It's inhuman. It's Borg-like, and it's focused in all the wrong areas. So, like we talked about this last week. We don't need a bigger government. We just need a government that laser focuses on issues that are actually important to the health of our people. Like one thing you talk about a lot. Physical health.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not allowed to talk about it anymore. I mean, I guess some women's brand is getting in trouble for sending diet bars out with their clothes in the new year. I don't know, but including in some plus size orders. So people probably thought they were targeted. They're getting like their large shirt and like, you know, it's got a little diet bar in there. But
you have a snack.
I mean, isn't January the month where like even like the guys who have like the fat is beautiful stuff, like kind of try to hit the gym, like at least for a week or two.
Yeah, it is. That is.
This is it.
Yeah. People give up drinking for a month.
Yeah. So public health, that'd be another area where maybe we should focus some government resources.
No, totally. But that was my plan for
as
this episode.
John F. Kennedy said, there is nothing more, what is it?
It's so funny.
Depressing than to see fat, pudgy looking little children go to the high school basketball game and regard it as their week's exercise.
Yeah. Something wasn't he like talking that. About, like, he was referring to video of real kids, though, or was it just spliced together in video with real kids? It was a government
video. Oh, no,
video.
It was a speech on how we needed, how there was too many fat little American kids who just watched other people play sports. And that was, there was no comparison, right? We can't even recruit for the military anymore.
No, the childhood obesity rate, I was looking at this yesterday, has doubled in the last, like, let alone the 1960s. Like, we're talking the last two or three decades. Doubled. And meanwhile, we are spending $10 million on statues of arms that look nothing even like arms,
at least
let alone the whole body.
I think that was raised privately. But wow, what a deal.
Well, but it's
$10
being
million
sanctioned
to expose
in
modern art in Boston.
It's being sanctioned in a public place.
Yeah.
Boston Common's public, I'm assuming.
It is. It's common.
There you go.
You take your cow there to grace. And if you want to hang somebody, well, you better get a warrant.
You get a hanging warrant. This is my execution.
Colonial law was based.
Permission to execute? Granted. All right. Christopher Bedford, executive editor over at the Common Sense Society. As always, thank you so much for lending your wisdom to Federalist Radio Hour for this half hour.
I do what I can.
You do. You do it for the people. That's the other thing. You're a selfless man. All right. Well, you've been listening to another edition of the Federalist Radio Hour. I'm Emily Jashinsky, culture editor here at the Federalist. We'll be back soon with more. Until then, be lovers of freedom and anxious for the prey.